TFM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Saddle Up, our dedicated Star Trek Strange New Worlds show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, before we get started, I'm just curious, have you ever seen a zombie movie?
Chris, of course I've seen a zombie movie, and I'm a big fan of some of them. I'm not a huge fan of all of them, but I've been dying to show you, Chris. Hold on, let me put my leg up there. Oh, can you see my Gornskin boots?
Wow.
Brand new, baby!
Those are stylish.
And thank you.
I have to say, did you risk your life to get those boots?
Actually, I just got it at Gorn R Us, and they sell all the latest Gorn apparel. I tell you what, make great waterproof jackets. You've got fantastic boots, of course. Great belts, you know.
Great
so,
belts.
I mean, if you're needing something new, Gorn R Us has it for you. We're not sponsored by Gorn R Us, but yeah, we should be at
right,
this point.
Right. Well, I'm glad to hear they have the belts, because ever since I saw Arena when I was much younger, I've wanted to have that belt that the Gorn captain is wearing, and I hope they've got that top also.
You know, that top was really nice. Having just rewatched Arena, I found myself thinking the same thing. Why is this not on sale at StarTrek.com?
You know, it's kind of surprising that it's not, to be honest.
So true, right?
I mean, everything else is, so why would that not
be? Apparently, yeah. So,
all right, everyone. Well, we're going to continue our discussion of Star Trek Strange New Worlds today. And sadly, it's the final episode of Season 2. It is called Hegemony, and here is a short rundown of the story. A Gorn attack on the Federation colony of Parnassus Beta threatens to turn mounting tensions into a full-blown war. When Captain Pike's partner, Captain Battelle, gets caught in the attack, he defies Admiral April's orders and mounts a rescue mission. With Chapel also missing, Spock is happy to help, but to do so will require suiting up and flying through space. With the help of another familiar face, Pike and Spock return to the Enterprise with their lovers, but others, not all wearing red shirts, aren't so lucky. With part of his crew abducted in cold blood, what will Pike do? A big lizard now truly is in the Federation's backyard as the second season of Strange New Worlds wraps up with a dramatic finish manufactured just for the occasion. All right, Matthew, I want to be safe, so let's go. Barbershop, now. We're going to get into our discussion, and I don't want the Gorn listening in.
Well, it's a good thing that you did that, Chris, because one of the most interesting things about this episode, of course, is that I think we fully expand on the Gorn and who they are in Strange New Worlds, and give us a much better picture of you know, not what the younglings look like as Gorn, but we actually see a full-size Gorn here.
Mm-hmm.
And we get an understanding of possibly their almost, they kind of give this locust-like mentality to them, that they can just swarm because of an environmental effects.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what we find out here about the Gorn is very fascinating, and I think very interesting for a race that we don't really know a lot about. We've only seen very seldomly in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be awesome if this show wasn't pretending to be a part of canon.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think how I want to get started with talking about getting to know the Gorn, because, like, I understand creatively the desire to use the Gorn, because we had that Gorn captain in Arena, and that was the only time we saw them for years and years and years. And yet, the Gorn Captain and that look kind of became iconic in American culture. It's one of those things that
people
they don't know what it is. Maybe they're not Star Trek fans, but they've probably run across it somewhere. I remember that commercial. Was that like 15 years ago or more? There was a commercial, I think it was during the Super Bowl, and Shatner and someone dressed up as the Gorn Captain were watching TV or football together, and they had a pillow fight on the sofa. You know, that's like how much a part of the culture it became. And then we got the Gorn on Enterprise that was only in the Mirror Universe, and it was sort of like a baby Godzilla. And then...
But at the same time, it wasn't... It was a CGI extrapolation of something that you could do now that, of course, you could never have done in the 60s.
Sure. Right. So they were trying to create a somewhat more realistic reptilian species that was scary to the Enterprise crew. And so then moving beyond that, we don't get anything for a long time. And there have been a couple of Gorn pop up on Lower Decks, and now Strange New Worlds is making them their big baddie, where every series has a big baddie. And I understand the creative desire to do that. It seems like it would be a fun race to play around with. But they've just gone so far off the rails with it that if you want to try to make it all fit together with what we've known up to this point in Star Trek and make it fit together with Kirk's encounter with the Gorn Captain in Arena, you really can't. And I don't know what that means exactly, because if we just take Strange New Worlds on its own, then it's fine. If we're not going to try to make the pieces all fit together, then it doesn't really matter, because they can use the Gorn here to create some suspense and to have a big villain for the show. And they've started, like you said, to flesh it out. We see an adult Gorn finally. And I know we speculated on this a long time ago, I think in season one on this podcast, where we said, yeah, these little Gorn we're seeing, maybe these are the young ones and they grow up to be more like the Gorn Captain, where they can... They actually seem like a species that would have technology and build spaceships and do all the stuff that they do.
Right.
So I felt like, just talking about the aesthetics, I did feel like here that with the younglings, they had taken a cue from what Enterprise tried to do and then updated that to modern effects and made them feel realistic. But when you look at the Gorn Captain, or I don't know if he's a captain, but the Gorn, adult Gorn that is fighting Spock here, when you look through the helmet mask that he's wearing and you look at his facial features, I feel like they're trying to find sort of a happy medium between the Gorn Captain in Arena and these more creature-looking younglings, and that they're trying to take the face and the snout and the angles of the face and update it the way that we've seen them update other species in the modern Star Trek series and make it feel like a modern extrapolation of what we saw in Arena instead of something entirely new.
I think that you're right in the sense that they're trying. I think, you know, having just watched Arena, that they are taking, I would say, way too many liberties with trying to update the Gorn, because I think that you can update the Gorn in a way that feels like TOS, but a realistic version of that, right? And you can do that in a way that would be incredibly interesting and very cool. And I would say that I don't actually feel them trying that hard. I feel like they're just like, you know what? Let's basically make them look like alien raptors.
Yeah.
And I mean, when I say alien, I mean really alien.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this weird combination of aliens from the Alien movies as
yeah,
well as...
Yeah, I feel that for sure. Yeah.
You know, they're trying so hard in that. And I get why you want to do it. But I think the biggest question I have is why? Why are we using, again, I've said this many times throughout this whole season, and so I'm going to sound like a broken record, but you don't have to be creating these problems for yourself
mm-hmm.
when you could just create a different race.
Yeah.
That because we don't even know, like, we don't know anything about the Gorn, but you don't have to use them to be the ones that is here in, you know, A Strange New Worlds so that we create this continuity issue.
Mm-hmm.
You can create a whole new race that is alien-like and reptilian and scary and all that stuff. There's plenty of space in the universe for you to be able to do that. Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're talking about a colony that's on the edge of Federation space where you're pushing up against an area that you don't know, then mm-hmm. you don't know what's on the other side, right? So there could always be an unknown alien race waiting there that's not happy about the fact that you built the colony.
Yes. I could not agree with you more. I mean, you're absolutely right, especially in this time period.
And
so I just don't understand as mm-hmm. to why you would be willingly creating this issue for yourself.
Well, I think it's what I was saying earlier, that creatively, you get enamored with the idea of taking a race that we saw very, very little of, but yet people know and kind of love, or they're interested in it. And then you can make that race your own, and you can create all this background for them. And you get so hooked on that idea and excited about it, and your creative juices start flowing, and you forget the one very important thing, which is that your viewers have to be able to get from here to there, from the point where you are now to the point where they first met this alien. And if it's too different and the story doesn't make sense, then everything else that you're trying to do is undermined.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's very clear that the Federation has no idea who the aliens are in Arena.
Yeah.
They don't know what the ship configuration is. They've never seen the Gorn before. They've never heard of the Gorn before.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and Strange New Worlds has basically kind of jumped the Gorn from the beginning of the series, where nobody knew who they were in mm-hmm. the original series of Star Trek. And just because Captain Kirk isn't on this episode
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean the entire Federation wouldn't know who the Gorn were. It doesn't mean that Uhura and Scotty and Spock, who are all on the original series Enterprise, wouldn't know who they were. Right?
All these characters are here in this moment.
Yes.
And yet none of them seem to have any knowledge of it whatsoever, which makes sense. Again, look, the story was written in 1966, and it was the 19th episode of Star Trek. And this is the 893rd episode of Star Trek. So, of course, in those early days, they're just making stuff up and they're just figuring it out. And they're not thinking about the fact that someone 56 years later is going to come along and try to write into what they're creating there. And you can't go mm-hmm. back and rewrite that stuff. And so, of course, it's not all going to make sense. But still, the thing that gets me about the Gorn and this episode, Hegemony in general, and some of the stuff that happens in it, which I do want to touch on, is that I get the feeling that they actually looked at Arena and they tried to create parallels between Arena, what happens in that episode, what happened to the colony on Cestus III, how Kirk viewed the conflict with the Gorn, how mm-hmm. Spock and McCoy viewed the Federation's role in creating the friction with the Gorn in the first place. And they tried to create parallels of that in Hegemony. And yet there are obvious things. Like you said, Kirk Kirk says, "This is Captain James Kirk of the Starship Enterprise. Whoever finds this, please get it to Starfleet Command. I'm engaged in personal combat with a creature apparently called a Gorn." Mm-hmm. And then later, he also talks about he's fighting a large reptile who the Metrons refer to as a Gorn.
Right.
It's very clear that, yeah, like you say, Kirk's not on the ship here, which is kind of surprising given how much he hangs around on Pike's ship. He's not there this time. And therefore, I feel like the writers are probably thinking that, well, you know, Kirk's not here, and that's why he didn't know. But the problem is nobody knew, not just that Kirk didn't know. And
right.
So I don't know. I know that we have people listening to us right now saying, come on, Chris and Matt, give it up. You guys are always talking about things like this, mm-hmm. but seriously, this one, it is kind of a pretty big one when you're writing in, like when you write in Star Trek, I think you do need to be aware of the overall framework because, as I've said many times over the years on podcasts, the fact that it all pretty much fits together makes it feel like a real world. And that's what makes it work so well for me because there's a realism to it that helps the overall messages that they're trying to talk about stick the landing instead of it just feeling right. like it's all made up.
Well, and I think the internal consistency is what helps any fiction feel real. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the reason that people, you know, Star Wars, the Star Wars universe has an internal consistency to it that helps it feel real, even though it's a story we all know. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings is like that. All of these big fantasy and sci-fi things that we've all loved in our world that have been written in the last, you know, 100 years. We like them because they create these alternate worlds for us to exist in and mm-hmm. to enjoy and to learn things from. And so I don't think there's anything wrong with you saying, yeah, the reason that Star Trek works is because it has this internal logic and consistency to it. I just watched Star Trek 09. My wife and I watched that the other night. We're making our way through TOS now after her working her way through Enterprise, and mm-hmm. we just kind of stopped and we decided we'd watch the Pine Star Trek there and just we watched the first one. And there's even an internal consistency in that movie in the sense that they knew if they were going to do an offshoot, they needed to have a logical reason for these characters to be different and yet similar, but not everything be the same. You know, the reason everything looks different in there. And mm-hmm. so they created that internal logic so that they honored everything that had come before and yet allowed themselves to create an alternate timeline mm-hmm. that allowed us to play in this universe with the new characters and do different things with them, mm-hmm. you know? And so that would make sense to fans, but also would make sense to new people. And I think the issue here is that I think the thing I'm most frustrated with is that Strange New Worlds is a very fun show. Mm-hmm. I think that captures a lot of the heart of Star Trek and what we loved mm-hmm. about it. And I think that there's a really disingenuousness to the writers and the creators of this show trying to have it both ways. Mm-hmm. That we're canon, but we're going to be like body checking canon. Well, you didn't just body check canon. You took it out all the way.
I mean, you airlocked canon in this case.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And so I think it would have been so much more enjoyable if they had been like, you know what? Everything we did with Discovery kind of creates this whole alternate timeline. Mm-hmm. And you're all loving Pike and everything, right? We're just going to continue that, mm-hmm. right? Nobody would have cared. Would care.
Because, I mean, fans enjoy alternate timelines as well.
Exactly.
Star Trek is replete with alternate timeline stories. There's nothing wrong with creating stories yeah. that are set in a different timeline.
I 100%. I mean, we love, you just mentioned that. I mean, we love the whole idea of, yesterday's Enterprise and All Good Things and, you know, all of these alternate stories. We love, you know, people have loved the Mirror Universe for that reason. So I think the writers need to have a real heart to heart with themselves. The creators need to get like a real heart to heart and just finally admit, guys, we're playing in an alternate timeline, but that makes this story so much more exciting because now I know what's going to happen to Nurse Chapel. What's going to happen to Spock? What's going to happen to Uhura? What's going to happen to Scotty? All of that's up in the air now.
Yeah.
Because well, I don't Mbinga, know that they're going to end
Mbinga
up.
We know Mbinga survives as well, right?
Exactly. So all of these characters that are actually in jeopardy are actually in jeopardy, but if you do that. And that makes the story so much more fun, and I still can really enjoy the series, but actually feel the danger now for our characters, because you know what? Even though Pike thinks he knows the future, maybe he doesn't actually know the future.
Right.
Maybe Pike dies sooner rather than later. I don't know, but that's the joy of this if we're not beholden to what we think we already know.
Well, yeah. And that's something I wanted to touch on as well. I said in my synopsis that it has a dramatic finish manufactured just for the occasion. And it did feel like manufactured drama throughout this episode because we know what happens to these characters. We don't know what happens to La'an. We don't know what happens to Pellia. But Pellia's been in a handful of episodes. Is anyone really invested in what happens to Pellia? La'an, I think we're invested in what happens to La'an, but they're not going to get rid of the character of La'an on this show. She's a key part of the show. I cannot imagine that her character would not make it out of here. Now, you can go back to The Next Generation when characters are in trouble, and you know that Riker's going to make it back to the ship. Beverly's going to make it back to the ship, right? They're not going to kill off main characters. The only time that we ever thought that might happen was The Best of Both Worlds when we went into that summer with that cliffhanger and there was talk about Patrick Stewart and would he return or not because it was so early in the run of the rebirth of Star Trek on television. But even then, I didn't think that Picard's going to be off the show, but at least there was a possibility. But overall in Star Trek, you know, they're not, unless there's a contract problem, which was the case with Jadzia Dax, they're not going to kill off major characters.
Well, and I think, again, this is the place where it makes it more exciting. You know, you don't have the prequel problem then if this is in an alternate timeline where those type of things can happen. I mean, you know, again, that's what 09 did, right? I mean, George Kirk died at the beginning of that. Well, we knew George Kirk wasn't dead at that time period in the original series, but it created this sense of like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I think that gives you much more creative freedom to be able to do that. And also it allows you the creative freedom, like we were talking about, to explore the Gorn in this way. And they're different than what we know from the original series. But this also creates a catalyst for you to be able to go into the series further. I mean, you could take Strange New Worlds all the way through what we know of as TOS and do a whole new version of TOS if you wanted. And that's exciting because I don't know what's going to happen then, you know.
Think of Operation Annihilate if Sam Kirk isn't there on the planet at that time because he's...
Exactly. He's off doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're absolutely right, though, is that it creates a better sense of drama and more fun. And the biggest, you know, I would say the biggest thing here is that prequels, when done well, they help you forget that it's a prequel in the sense that you do fear for the characters, even though you know they're going to survive. I would say here, because everything is so up in the air about where this is and how this fits or whatever, I actually do have a sense of trepidation because, like, I don't really feel like anybody is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because, in all honesty, this just can't be the prime timeline. And therefore, it does, like, when all those people are left on that ship, I'm like, well, dang, like, you really could take this in a whole new direction and be much more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think they're going to do that? Probably not. But at least the possibility is open there. As Spock would say, there are always possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the better possibilities, so we can get away from the prequel problem and we can have actual drama on this show. And then, in all honesty, a lot of other things in this series make so much more sense if mm-hmm. we're just in a place where we can basically do whatever we want.
Yeah. Well, this show was built on the prequel problem and the problem of drama in a prequel, because in Discovery Season 2, which is what spun off this series, Pike sees his future, and then this series opened with a fair bit of talk about that, which thankfully they have not made that a constant part of the series, mm-hmm. but they've touched on it here and there. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, the way things are going, I think they may do something unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here, well, the one other thing I wanted to mention about the Gorn before we just completely move away from it is that, like we said in Arena, it's very clear that Starfleet doesn't know anything about the Gorn. They haven't encountered them. They don't have any records of it at all. And yet here, Pike calls for Crate 32, break in case of Gorn. Like, not only do they know about the Gorn, their scientists have created an entire arsenal of weapons designed specifically to neutralize the Gorn, and then they've equipped every starship with them, and they even have a name for the crate. So I just don't know how you can make that fit together.
Right. I know. Thank you for bringing that up, because just put it this way, this season has slowly been putting nails in the idea of whether or not this is canon, mm-hmm. and the coffin is now nailed shut, because, and don't come at me on social media, feel free, but you'll be wrong. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. And what I'm saying mm-hmm. is that's okay, because it makes this so much more exciting if that is the case.
Well, I think that's what some people misunderstand when they listen to us talk about this, is that we're not saying it's not okay. We're just saying, be honest about the fact that
mm-hmm.
this story is going down a different path. I do want to say about the word canon, because the word canon gets thrown around so much. Everything that's happening now is also canon, because canon is the material that the creators put on the screen. Things can be in an alternate timeline and still be canon.
Exactly.
The J.J. Abrams films are also canon. They just take place mm-hmm. time-branched, and a different timeline went this way. It's the same thing if you take a story like All Good Things. All those events that happen in the future, those are canon. But that's not the path that our characters ultimately went down. It was an alternate mm-hmm. future for them. It's still all canon. So when we say canon, we're not saying that something isn't authentic. We're just saying that it doesn't fit together in a linear fashion the way that we experience reality and the way events happen for us. This is more like the multiverse theory, where you make a decision mm-hmm. and the universe splits.
Yeah. No, 100%.
One other thing I wanted to talk about while we're talking about the dramatic elements of the story is something that doesn't have anything to do with, do the characters survive, or does this fit in with the future timeline and get us to Arena and all that. It's just about writing in general. One thing that weakens this episode for me is that it falls into the very, very common practice of having people be in the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Chapel is, first of all, she's on the Cayuga. She's the only person who wakes up.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that.
Now, I imagine there are other people waking up elsewhere on the ship, but, you know, she's the only person that wakes up in this area. that's plausible. Maybe everyone died. But when you're watching it, you feel kind of like, okay, so she's the only one who wakes up. She's been unconscious. She suffered these injuries. But in a matter of seconds, she's got all her faculties back. And she's clear-minded, it seems. And then she sees the Enterprise and Spock right out the window. Perfect position. Perfect view. But then what gets me more is that she happens to walk into the room where Spock is facing off against the Gorn. And she enters that room at just the perfect moment to be able to grab the phaser and save him. And again, in this universe, anything can happen, right? But as a viewer, I just feel like it's just so convenient. And I know you have a limited amount of time to tell the story, but there are all sorts of other paths that you could go down to get them out of that situation. It just feels a bit easy to me.
Yeah, I did find this to be a frustrating thing, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I also felt the whole thing about Scotty, like for some reason, being on a shuttle, like that whole thing just felt ridiculous. And that he would show up for no good reason other than, hey, it's Scotty. And so absolutely both of those are, I think, some of the, like, I don't want to criticize the writing, but I just don't feel like that is the writing that I've come to expect from this show, where we are, have been smarter before this. I felt like we felt more organic, and this is what I'd say. Season one introduced the idea of Cybok as Spock's brother and everything, and bringing that whole thing in and being able to explore that in a way that we'd never explored before. That felt organic and interesting and new and fresh. And where has that gone in this series? Like, why have we not touched on that at all this season, when that was such a big point of the first season and working kind of towards that whole idea? It's like we've forgotten all that in light of trying to go down this Gorn story, where it's like, if we had just focused on the story with Spock and Cybok and all of that stuff with the Vulcans, that would have been fascinating. And you wouldn't have actually had any of these continuity errors, right? Because we don't know anything about Cybok other than what we knew from Star Trek V, which is very little. So you can add a whole crap ton of information and storyline there that, but as long as you're not introducing Kirk to the series in the sense of, like, he knows about all of that,
right?
You have the ability to really rock our world with what we know. Right. And so,
well, that could have happened on one of the days when Kirk wasn't hanging out on Pike's ship, right?
Yes. But, but I just feel as though, you know, we really are absolutely 100% dealing with the problems of right place, right time. And I would say, unfortunately, kind of silly ways instead of, I think, digging into storylines where it would have made more sense and been much more interesting if they had just walked down the path they had started in season one. Instead, I think they've gone down another path, and it's kind of led down. And I'm not saying that it's bad, but it's just created this frustration now with the dishonesty of the show of trying to be, you know, this thing that it's not. And so, yeah, so, I completely get you.
Well, talking about Scotty being in the right place at the right time. Now, we do have to be honest that the same thing happens in Star Trek 2009, where Scotty happens to be stationed where Kirk lands when he's thrown off the ship by Spock.
This is true. Although that whole movie is about this idea that the universe is bringing these people together, and it does in every universe because there's something about these people being together that it's like, it's fate.
Yeah.
That whole movie is literally about that idea.
It is. Yeah.
This is not. Well, so is it there's not? A difference.
Is it not? I mean, maybe this episode isn't, but is the series, the way they're doing it, not potentially doing the same thing and that all these people are just being brought together?
If that's what you want to do, mm-hmm. that's fine. Then you need to be honest about it in the show itself instead mm-hmm. of pretending like you're not doing that. They're too clever by half, right? They're pretending they're one thing and then sliding in other things. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, again, 09 is very blatantly and very honest about what it is. Mm-hmm. This show has been marketed in one way and is sliding in all these other things and another. And I don't, I think it's that incongruity, it's that dishonesty that's really rubbing me the wrong way. Mm-hmm. You're just upfront about it the whole time. I have no problem with that. I think it's great. It's going to be fun. I love the 09 series. I think, Into Darkness is not as great, but, you know, I've always been a proponent of wanting more of those movies because I enjoyed that crew. I enjoyed what they were doing. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed all of it. Do that with the Strange New Worlds universe. I'm fine with that too. But let's just be upfront about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think here it's a bit of this tug of war creatively, like the vision for the series, which we talked about on one of the recent podcasts of, are we doing a series where we're telling the story of Pike and his crew aboard the Enterprise, mm-hmm. this backstory that we knew happened, but we didn't know hardly anything about? Or are we doing a series that's leading us into TOS? And therefore,
right.
the goal of the series is to bring together the TOS crew members and then hand the Enterprise over to them. So what is the goal of the series? Right now, I feel like some people involved see it as, let's tell the story of Pike and his Enterprise. And some people see it as, we're going to take fans into the original series, kind of in the way that the end of Rogue One leads you directly into the beginning of A New Hope.
Oh my gosh, that's such a great illustration. Like, mm-hmm. it's such a great pull because it is that one for one, right? Mm-hmm. And Rogue One was very upfront as to exactly what it was, which mm-hmm. is we are leading you specifically into the opening moments of A New Hope. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I think it's a better story, and people can then buy the story and buy into it. Again, I think honesty is the best policy when it comes to storytelling here. And that, because this show, I think, you know, didn't you feel like it was sold as being, this is the story of Christopher Pike and his crew?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's what it's supposed to be about. For sure. The thing about Rogue One for me is that even though it's a prequel to A New Hope and we know what's going to happen, for me, it's still one of the best Star Wars movies. Like, as a film, it's just a great movie, even though we know that Jyn and Cassian are going to die at the end. We know they're not going to survive when they transmit the plans, but it doesn't matter because there's still drama to what's going to happen next for mm-hmm. the rebellion, right?
Right.
It's so, yes. so like you can do this type of thing very well, but back to whether this is leading into TOS or not, it's just, you know, I mentioned a few episodes back how we have the episode that ends with Kirk, Spock, and Uhura sitting together at the table. And now we meet Scotty, and it just feels like they're bringing in all the characters, and, you know, season three might be to have these characters work together more. And then season four might be practically into TOS at that point. I don't know. It depends on how they choose to accelerate it. But right. I do think it's interesting to think about it as possibly a case where the universe, fate, brings the same people together. You see that in, say, the Mirror Universe in DS9, where the same people come together, and you have Tuvok, who actually, because Voyager was never lost in the Delta Quadrant in that Mirror Universe, Tuvok is there with familiar characters because kind of the same people just get brought together.
And I think that makes sense that that would happen if this is an alternate universe, mm-hmm. right? Because again, there's just not any good indication in the original series that these characters knew each other before that mm-hmm. time period. The only ones that we knew each other and we know from the past get the idea that Kirk and McCoy have known each other for longer mm-hmm. period of time, but that's pretty much like it. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really get a sense that anybody, I don't know. I think honesty is the best policy. And speaking of an arena, that episode, I think, does such a great job of this idea of showing how humanity has evolved and, mm-hmm. you know, the way Kirk deals with the Gorn in the end. He's not going to mm-hmm. kill them and everything. I mean, this episode, I think, does such a shoddy and terrible job of showing that we all just assume that the Gorn are nothing but monsters and can't be reasoned with. And only mm-hmm. Pike is literally the only one who has the thought that maybe diplomacy might be a good option here. And everybody else just kind of like looks at him like he's an idiot to think that. And so, and even he, when he's talking to April, he's discussing the idea that maybe they're just monsters.
Right.
And maybe a monster is just a monster.
Yeah.
And so I really felt like, you know, if you're trying to kind of craft a story that has some similarities to, Arena and, you know, obviously this is a two-parter, so we don't know how it's going to end. But I was just kind of disappointed, especially in rewatching Arena. These people feel very un-Starfleet in that sense of mm-hmm. even thinking about the possibility of that, you know, maybe they're actually people too. And maybe he's just another, as Kirk would say, maybe he's just a starship captain who thought he was defending his people mm-hmm. and we made a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, where's that thought process other than the few lines that Pike has in this episode?
Well, that is where I think this episode tries to do something that's very core to Star Trek and talk about diplomacy. And I think that is an area where I felt like they looked at Arena and they tried to lift that element and put it into this episode, but they just touch on it and then it gets lost again as the episode goes on. Mm-hmm. So as you mentioned in Arena, to summarize, Kirk tells the Gorn captain, hey, you killed people. You're going to kill me like you killed people on Cestus 3. And the Gorn captain says, you were intruding. You established an outpost in our space. And they have a back and forth about that. And then back up on the ship, McCoy and Spock are there. And McCoy says, can that be true? Was Cestus 3 an intrusion on their space? Spock says, it may well be possible. We know very little about that section of the galaxy. And then McCoy says, then we could be in the wrong. And Spock says, perhaps. That is something best decided by diplomats. So then when you jump to hegemony, Pike is talking to April, and April says, I think it's safe to say that we don't understand the Gorn. And then Pike says, I've seen them up close. They're not hard to understand. They're monsters. And April says, monster is a word to describe those who don't understand us. And Pike says, sometimes a monster is just a monster. So at that point in the beginning, Pike himself isn't thinking about them as anything other than these monstrous reptiles that have killed so many people and they've encountered from time to time. But once they're down on the planet and they're hiding out and they see the younglings working together, and La'an says it doesn't make sense. They shouldn't be gathering like that, the younglings. They should be fighting for dominance, not working together. Then Pike says, if you don't understand them, it means there is something about the Gorn we've yet to discover. Maybe instead of finding a way to fight them, we find some way to reach them. And then he trails off. But I feel like he's thinking, like, maybe we should try to talk to them. And that's that's where Kirk lands in Arena when he's talking to the Metrons, because Kirk asks what happened to the Gorn, and the Metrons say, I sent him back to his ship. If you like, I shall destroy him for you. And Kirk says, no, that won't be necessary. We can talk, maybe reach an agreement. And then the Metron says, very good, Captain, there is hope for you. And I thought that was interesting too, because as humans, we're looking at the Gorn and thinking there are monsters. Mm-hmm. But the Gorn are looking at humans and thinking there are monsters. And a third party, an outside viewer, in the case of Arena, the Metrons can look in and see them both as being similar, because the reason the Metrons pit Kirk and the Gorn captain against one another in the first place is that the Metrons saw two species that they both felt were aggressive and were predators.
Right.
And I think that at the end of Arena, Kirk realizes this too. And that's where I think Arena is a very good episode of Star Trek for hitting on the message that Star Trek tries to get across about who we are and how we can be better. And this episode, I feel like they touched on that. They had the diplomats element with April's comments at the beginning. They tried to work some of that in, and Pike comes to that bit of realization. But then the way the episode ends, that's sort of all brushed away. Now, maybe the resolution to this, when we eventually get part two, maybe it will give us that same conclusion like we got in Arena, and it's just taking us longer to get there.
It could be. I also, though, think that unfortunately, the way that this series is dealing with the Gorn is making them much less intelligent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my feeling too. Yeah,
because of trying to create this idea that they have some sort of swarm mentality that can be triggered by some sort of like natural occurrence creates a being that doesn't seem like they would even have been able to create space flight, because they would be going so much on instinct instead of intellect. Mm-hmm. And what makes humans different from the animals is our intellect, right? Our ability to think beyond just instinct and to overcome, in fact, some of our worst instincts for the better, right? All of those things are what make us different. And so, unfortunately, I think the way so far that they've written the Gorn makes that seem like it's going to be very difficult for them to be able to do. So, I mean, I guess we'll see, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me what they did on Discovery as well with the Ba'ul. And you want to create a very, very scary, very frightening race, but you also want to give them all the same advanced technologies that we have as the Federation. But you portray them in a way that really makes you feel like, how would they ever manage to get there in the first place? That's where, like, it's wonderful that with today's technology, you can create aliens that really, truly look different, and they're not the bumps on the forehead like we've kind of joked about in Star Trek over the years. But there's a great benefit to the bumps on the forehead when it comes to storytelling, which is that you can create better parallels between groups of people so that you can tell your social commentary in a way that allows it to make more sense and get the message across, which is the ultimate point of Star Trek, I think.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. I mean, Star Trek is about the human condition. And so, and when it's at its best, we've even talked about this, even with this series, they've had episodes where we're truly exploring that, and that's what makes it interesting. We do have a question here, because we leave it with whether or not, you know, Battelle will survive because she's been, I mean, I guess you could say impregnated with the Gorn aliens because they use host bodies just like aliens do in the movie Aliens, and whether or not they can save her. I mean, do you have any thoughts, or is it just one of those things where we'll see what happens, because I'm not really sure whether she lives or dies?
Yeah, I thought about it a bit. My immediate thought was that yeah, it's the end of Batel, because you can do some stuff with Pike's character if he lost his partner as a result of this. The fact that they brought her to the Enterprise, and the fact that now there's a battle and there's a good chance that there's going to be a power loss and then the stasis field will drop, I have a feeling that Batel being infected, impregnated with these Gorn eggs means that the Gorn will be able to infiltrate the Enterprise as a result of being brought aboard, with Pike trying to save Batel and therefore introducing a danger to the ship that didn't need to be introduced. I'm not saying that I wouldn't do the same thing to save my partner, but just if you just look at the decision, maybe from a military tactics standpoint, he certainly took a risk that I think most military strategists would not take in introducing the possibility of the enemy being able to infiltrate your ship just to possibly save one person. This one, I really am not sure where they will go, because if I just think about how the show is written, and because she's a character that was just introduced on this show, she's not someone we know, and they still see themselves as telling a story that's set in the prime timeline leading into TOS, so they're not going to knock off any of the main characters that we know survive later on. This would give them a chance to create some drama and some consequences by killing a character that is important to one of our main characters. So I can certainly see this being the end for her. I think probably they'll find a way to save her at the very end, but it will be after she has spawned Gorn younglings that run around the Enterprise.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, and I think that they are going to save her, and the reason is because if Pike is working his way towards death in, you know, a decade or so, or death as he to the life he knows now, I think the man has enough suffering in his life without then taking away this person that's really important to him. And I don't see a really good reason thematically for Pike to do that, because what else does he need to go through when he's already come to grips with his own death in a few years? I can't really see a reason to do that thematically. The character doesn't need to learn any more of those type of lessons. And so I see her surviving, because I don't really see there being a good reason to kill her off other than basically just to kill her off. So, yeah, and I hope she survives, because I like the actress and I love their relationship. I think it creates an interesting place for Pike to go, where it makes her surviving actually makes his impending doom more doom-like, because maybe they are really in love. And what if she ends up pregnant with one of his kids? And like, you know, I mean, you create this whole storyline to which we don't know from the menagerie whether or not he had kids or anything like that. We don't know any of that stuff. It was never said. So there's absolutely the place where you could do that. And of course, you know, like I said, too, if this is not the prime timeline, it doesn't really matter anyway, because you can do whatever you want. But I still think it makes for a much more interesting story than for the character of Pike if she actually survives than if she dies.
Yeah. While we're talking about characters, let's sit on a few more things quickly here as we get close to the end. One is Spock Chapel. I talked earlier about how convenient it was that she walks into the room and she's able to save Spock, and they can work together and they have this life-threatening experience together. And then you see them hold hands at the end, and they had a fight before this, and Spock was feeling like, you know, he wants to apologize to her. And throughout this episode, I thought Ethan Peck did a really nice job of this. I felt like Spock is pulling back from emotions, like the hurt that he has felt from this relationship with Chapel And then they had a fight, and then he thought she was dead, and then he felt guilt over that. Like, all of that was a bit too much for him, and so he was pulling back to being more Vulcan again and
right.
letting go of this emotional exploration, which would play right into what I've been saying all along when people have complained about the portrayal of Spock, which is that they're doing a character arc. They're taking him into emotion so they can bring him back to the Spock that we know later. And I felt like that's where this story was going until the very end. And then they opened the door back up to the two of them being together. And so I'm curious to see where they go with that next season.
No, I'm excited about that too. You know, I like both of these characters. I like the actors involved. Can I just say though, the thought that Spock is the one that needs to apologize drives me crazy. Spock has nothing to apologize for.
Yeah.
I think that it is absolutely Chapel who is the one who needs to be apologizing to Spock to tell him how sorry she is that he found out the way that he did, that she did not have the guts to tell him how she was feeling in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry, but you know, the way that she's handled this whole situation, I found actually kind of disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And
like
the
you
fact
said
that,
last week, and yes. I saw a number of people who had the same reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I understand Spock feeling as though he does have something to apologize for, because that's kind of a very human reaction to mm-hmm. apologize because you want things to get back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Spock himself has anything to apologize for. I think he was he genuinely should be hurt that the person he was in a relationship with wasn't honest with him enough to tell him how they were really feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, had it come out in front of the entire crew, a very emotional conversation, especially for a Vulcan,
mm-hmm.
In front of the entire crew. So, yeah, I mean, I'll be very interested to see where that wraps up, because I am interested with these both of these characters. And in all honesty, I'm actually more interested with it if I don't for sure know how it's going to end. So mm-hmm. that's also something that makes this more exciting to me.
And the other one we should talk about just a little bit more is Scotty. Now, we said it was convenient that he was there. That's true. But if we step aside from the fact that he was there for a moment, just the character himself, Martin Quinn, the actor, I thought did a really nice job. He's Scottish. He's the first actor who's actually Scottish to ever play Scotty. And to me, I thought he did a really nice job with the character. He felt like a young Scotty to me. What did you think about him?
I mean, I thought he was fine. I we don't get a chance to spend a lot of time with him as mm-hmm. as a character. And so I think, but he did a fine job with the portrayal. I didn't have any issues with it in that sense. You know, it was... you know, I've always enjoyed the character of Scotty, and so to have him here was fun. You know, to bring back the conversation for a second to the Star Trek 09 and those films, mm-hmm. you know, Carl Urban playing Bones to me was always mm-hmm. my favorite part of the series, because I felt like he found a way to completely imbibe that character to the point where it was McCoy on screen, even mm-hmm. though he wasn't DeForest Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
He just found a way to be that character.
Yeah.
And so I have no problem with other people taking up the mantle of these characters. You know, I thought Chris Pine was a fine Kirk. So I think he has every ability to be a good Scotty, you know. I think the thing about it is like, I have no problem with them bringing Scotty in. I think I have a problem in this episode, the way he's brought in.
Yeah.
It just seems very strange.
Well, that goes back to my thought of they're kind of rushing the introduction of TOS characters because there seems to be a portion of the creators who see this as the road to TOS. And
I completely agree.
And seem a little bit impatient about getting there, to be honest. But he's here now. I thought Martin Quinn was really nice in the role. And yeah, he felt like a young Scotty who I could see growing into the older Scotty that we know later. All right. Well, what are your final thoughts and what's your rating for Hegemony?
So I kind of have two ratings, right? If this is in the prime timeline, this is like a 2, maybe 1.5, because it's just so ridiculous that it doesn't make any sense. And it just doesn't work. If this isn't in the prime timeline, goodness, it's an exciting episode. It's got tons of action. The episode looks great.
Oh, it looks great. It's beautiful.
The effects here are so well done. This is one of the standout episodes I think they've done with effects.
Yeah. I will also say that Maya Ravillo, who directed it, this is her 7th episode of Star Trek to direct. And I think that shows as well, because you can tell that she feels what Star Trek's supposed to be like compared with some of the directors they've had who it's their first time doing it.
Yes. And I think that if this is not in the prime timeline, we've created a great cliffhanger to where everyone is in danger. I don't know what's going to happen. And to me, that is so exciting. And so because I take this series as to be, you know, this way, especially in light of this episode, man, I'm going to give this a good 4 out of 5 Gorn hatchlings, because I think the even if it's not in the prime timeline, it still suffers from some of the things that we have talked about. Mm-hmm. So it's not as good as it could have been. But I thought it was a strong end to the season, and it makes me want to watch season 3 whenever the heck that's actually going to happen with this strike, which, you know, could be possibly a year or more now, which is, you know, terrifying for them because you lose all of the momentum. So regardless, though, this was a strong finish to season 2, especially a season that has been wildly up and down, I feel like.
Yeah. 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 It's a good point about rating this if it is in the prime timeline or not. So if it isn't, I agree with you. I think it's a really good episode. Of course, it's beautifully produced. It's very well acted. It's exciting. It's dramatic if you don't think you already know what's going to happen to the characters. So in that sense, I think it's very well done. In that case, I'd probably give it a 7 because I do think it suffers from some things like right place at right time and such that we talked about. Right. But for me, because they've stated that this is the prime timeline and they're working towards the TOS that we know, I'm going to have to rate it within that context. And so in that case, I'm going to give it 5 out of 10 small Midwest towns.
All right.
And one thing I didn't mention, actually, I wanted to mention, I like the parallel of them crashing the saucer section of the Cayuga into the interference tower with Kirk pushing the boulder down the hill to take out the Gorn captain. Yeah. Because in both cases, you're using some kind of projectile from high up to take out the Gorn. And I think it's a wonderful little parallel.
definitely fun. And, you know, that's where I feel like, you know, this show is finding ways to be inventive, you know, and again, if we're not having to worry about prime timeline canon, it's super exciting, right? But to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everyone, we would love to hear your thoughts on Hegemony. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the best way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to be an extension of the conversations on the podcast so that we can get your thoughts. You can share those with Matthew and me and with your fellow listeners. It is a closed group, however, so if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts right there. To find it, just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field. If it doesn't come up, type the whole name, The Babel Conference. Of course, you can also send us email. If you'd like to do that, please go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there, choose to send to a show, and choose Saddle Up, and your email will mosey its way right on over to Matthew and me. And of course, you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not helping Scotty turn a pile of stolen Gorn junk into the next engineering masterpiece, where can people find you?
Well, goodness, Chris, that takes so much time to do. So forgive me if I'm slow to respond on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, or Vero under the name MattRushing02. You can also find me here on the network outside of the Star Trek talk in the 602 Club, where we're talking about all of those things outside of Star Trek that we love. So many fandoms to connect with, so join us there. You can also find me doing literary tracks about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I do The Orb, where we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We also do Warp 5, where we talk about Star Trek Enterprise. And then we have Artificial Tango, where we've talked about Star Trek Picard. And we may have more coming there. You never know. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with a couple of shows. One is Completed. I did that with Drea Kaufman. It's called Owl Post. We talk about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. Aggressive Negotiations is where I talk Star Wars with John Mills each and every week. But, you know, Chris, when you're not waking up into a room on a deserted, destroyed ship where somehow you've survived and are trying to find a way home, where can people find you?
Yeah, I feel safe because there is a spacesuit nearby, very conveniently positioned. And, you know, my partner's on their way here to save me anyway. So, yeah, I feel okay, but when I
mean, you are one lucky man.
I really am. I mean, my flashlight even quit working, but I wasn't scared at all. So
good.
But no, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, doing all those shows with you. You can also find me all over the place in the back catalog. Larry Nemechek and I do the Ready Room from time to time. And you can find me in all sorts of episodes over the last 13 years or so podcast we have there. So lots of Star Trek talk for you to listen to there with my thoughts. You can also find me on social media. My username everywhere is C Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. Twitter is where I'm most active, but you can find me on Threads and all these new social platforms. So I'd love to hear from you there. And if you'd like to help us keep all the discussion that we're doing going, we could use your help to find out how to help us, how to get involved. Please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how. We would not be here without your help. So I want to send a huge thank you to everyone who's supporting us right now. Well, Matthew, this is the end of the season, but I have a feeling we'll be back at some point to talk a little bit more about Strange New Worlds and what's going on. But until we saddle up next time, why don't you go hang out with Pike in his kitchen and learn how to cook up some good grub?
Well, Chris, I'm so excited to learn how to cook from Pike, so hold on to your saddles.